Good afternoon, good evening. This is Veronica Entwistle, and I have a special guest today. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and my special guest today is Lee Gerdes, who is a paradigm shifter working with Brain State Technologies, helping us see that our even genetic patterning and genetic coding is not limiting us. So welcome to the show, Lee.
Thank you.
So you started this Brain State Technologies, and I just want to ask you, as far as I understand it, it's a process of reprogramming the brain using software, using technology, and so on. Is that right?
Yes. We don't use the word reprogramming, but we use the word balancing and harmonizing. But yes, that's what we do. We affect the brain state to make it more balanced and harmonized.
How did it all start?
You know, the old adage, need is the mother of invention.
Yeah.
Well,
very effective adage.
Yeah, I needed something.
Why did you need it?
I was a vice president of solutions for a software company, and the company was growing, you know, very quickly. I was responsible for an R&D efforts and then also consulting. So I had to go back and forth between tactical detail and, you know, high-level design. And in doing that back and forth so needfully, so quickly, I found myself to be limited. My brain just wouldn't work as fast as I wanted it to, and in going into the high-level design, I also found myself to be sort of depressive.
Hmm.
And so I began to research this, and what I found out was I didn't like the answers what I found out at all.
Like what? Fast
brains are depressing? Well, for one thing, you know, all creatives are likely to be depressive.
Okay.
And when you think about artists, composers, musicians, many, many writers, many kind of very creative people are known to be depressive. And the reason that so is because certain area of the brain, certain waves go down to allow a creative approach to come forward to execute it.
So you kind of dive in order to come up with a solution.
Yeah, you kind of let go in order to get.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And but what I found out when I found that out was that I could potentially train my brain to do that, and so I didn't have to go through the downtime. So that was the good news.
And how? Train your brain to go down into a deeper place so that you didn't wait for the depression to take you there.
Train my brain to receive and propel that forward so I didn't have to have a more slow process to have it happen.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah.
So it's a high-speed brain you're working with there, it sounds like.
It's a high-speed brain we're all working with. We're just trying to find out how best to use it.
Okay. And what kind of research? How'd you do research on that? You're a technical wizard, I know that. But
well, you know, with the advent of the Internet, you know, we're all... Oh, there's tons of stuff available. But also then I had opportunity to talk to a number of people, scientists around the world. And in doing that, too, I found out that I was limited slightly because I was male, which really I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
You can laugh now, but I'm going to finish the story to tell you the positive side of that.
Okay.
The negative side for a male is that our corpus callosum is less permeable, therefore we can't we don't multitask as well.
Mm-hmm.
We don't go back and forth, and most of the listeners, I bet, are going to agree with that if they're female. If they're male, they're going to...
We're a bit arrogant about that.
Yeah, if they're male, they're going to object, but, I mean, that's the reality, that generally speaking, corpus callosum is more permeable for female, less permeable for male, which means that we can, although... As a male, we can hunker down, if you will, to solve a problem much more readily.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if that problem is one involving tactical information and sequential information.
What's tactical? Is that application?
In my case, you know, computer design, computer software design. Very you hold a lot of things in your head at one time, and you stay on task. So that's good news for males. The other part that's good news for males is that our brains are larger. And then the other part, which everybody knows, but a lot of people don't know, you know, we're driven by what we see because of our occipital lobes are so much larger than a female.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why, you know, when it comes to, like, looking for a mate, we all do that appropriate to our makeup.
That's the back part of the brain?
Yes. Where vision is diagnosed.
Oh, I see.
So we get sort of a thrust from that.
Yeah.
Well, once
so
finding
we should have been those of us when we were looking for mates. We should have been looking for a bigger bulge back there.
I will not answer on the ground tonight. I will incriminate myself for sure.
That was just being playful, anyway.
You know, when a male's looking for a mate, what the female looks like is very important to him.
Oh, I see.
You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
So we're driven by that. We don't have a choice. We're just not like some people make us out to be, whatever those words are, dirty old men or whatever.
Superficial.
We are actually driven that way. That's how we're made. So
deep down, you're driven for beauty. That's interesting.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So when I found out this information, then the question was, well, how can I train my brain? How can I train my brain to help me beyond where I am into a more optimized state? And the law of quantum physics says that which we observe is changed. And there are some laboratories in the United States now who can prove this reality.
Yes.
That when you observe something, it's one state. When you don't observe it, it's another.
Mm-hmm.
So my point was, well, what if I could find a way to observe my brain and have my brain observe itself, particularly if I could do that and find out what an optimized state was? And so that's what I began to look for. I found the sciences of, you know, biofeedback, and then the adjunct to that is neurofeedback to be helpful and formative. But they weren't what I was trying to do. They were training the brain, and what I really wanted to do was trying to find a way to have it observe itself.
Hmm.
And so I used that science or all the information I could from those sciences and started trying to find a way to make that happen. I thought I had found that for myself. I felt better. I could move faster. I could go into and out of the creative process very quickly. In fact, so quickly now that I could turn it on at night when I went to bed and get up in the morning with some answers.
Great.
But the question then became for me more one very personal beyond that, and that personal need was that my son was having difficulty in school, wasn't in school anymore. I'm a geek, and I love school. I couldn't believe that, and as he was acting out to some degree like other young people act out sometimes, so I bribed him and so told him I'd pay him to go back to school if he let me train his brain. He did, and lo and behold, he went back to school and then got immediately on the dean's list.
Great.
We did that with other kids, and that happened as well. And now I'm saying, okay, we have something. And so,
how much training did it take?
For him, we probably had about 40 sessions in, roughly.
Hmm.
They were shorter at the time, but there were probably about 40 of them.
Why so many? Because it takes a long time to retrain the brain?
No, it's probably not even a third of that now, generally, for somebody that was his age. We know a lot more.
Okay.
And in 2 years, it's not even going to be probably a third of what it is now.
Wonderful.
So we're moving very rapidly now.
Hmm.
So that's how I entered the field, and then the question became, well, what is an optimized state? So in order to answer that question, I tried to think of a way that I could look at a normal brain or a normal person. I didn't know anybody that was normal. So that left out the category of the hundreds of people I knew, particularly me. So then the question was, well, how do we do that? And so instead of looking for a normal, I chose contentment on the one side to give me a baseline, and then pathology on the other side to see where that baseline was deviated.
Oh, that's smart. Okay.
And I did that with algorithms, I worked, and I used Buddhist monks, two Buddhist monks from Tibet, to give me the baseline for contentment. Both had over 40 years of meditation. Both were masters.
Hmm.
And then I used pathologies to find out how we deviated there. And we're still doing basically the same thing today, and going further and further in honing what areas are optimized for what particular brain.
Well, what kind of pathologies did you use?
Anything that anybody would come to me and say that they were having a problem with and couldn't get solved.
Okay.
Literally anything. So.
So it wasn't like insanity. It was just addictions or
addictions, sleep disorders, pain management, anxiety, relationship problems, depression.
So the normal pathologies. We're back to normal.
Eating disorders, a writer's block, a painter's block, a composer's block, and we're all interesting.
Your sample was pretty big, huh?
Yeah, and I just kept looking. I just kept taking anybody that wanted to work with me.
Wonderful.
So, and that's how we started. We just, you know, we didn't know exactly why. We still don't. And never will. What we carry between our ears is probably, 100 million neurons, the most complex system that we know of in the universe. I'm going to figure that out. No, I don't. Not this week.
Well, tell me this. This might be a naive question, but how did you learn to observe the brain? Is it your software? Are you using?
You use electrodes.
Okay.
And observe the energy that's happening in the brain and where it's happening as the brain changes from specific state to state. So, for example, you look at it with somebody's eyes closed and relaxed, and then you look at it given a specific task for a specific lobes of the brain.
Mm.
And from that, you get an idea of what's transpiring, okay,
mm-hmm.
in that.
So you're observing it in a graph forms and so on.
Yes, yes. We're measuring frequency and amplitude. Frequency being how energy is measured. How many peaks and valleys does that energy have over 1 second of time? Is a hertz. And then what is the amplitude? How high and low is that peak and valley?
Well, it's interesting to me because you're observing that, and is it your intentional? Is it your intention as you're observing it? Is that having a huge impact on these numbers?
The observation we're making of it isn't, but then we turn around and have the brain observe itself, and we do that by translating the actual energy in the brain into sound. And then playing that sound back when and only when it's going towards an optimized state.
Hmm.
And the brain starts to see itself. It starts to, it's as if you saw a whole big page of dots on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the dots had numbers on them, so you started drawing based on the numbers, and pretty soon what happens? A picture emerges.
Right.
And so it is with the brain.
Hmm.
And it sees itself, and when it sees itself, then in a more optimized state, and knows that that neural net can support it, it will go always up to the next level that it can. but it won't.
Once it knows that it will be supported.
Well, once it knows that it can go to that, you know, to that next level,
mm-hmm.
It will go there because it's easier. It's a more direct route.
Hmm.
And you're going from A to C. Wouldn't it be easier to go from A to C directly instead of taking a detour up to B?
Mm-hmm.
The question became in our minds, why is it that we take detours to B? And so we met a neurologist who proposed to us that trauma in life was the basis for that detour.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I then sat and listened to him and smiled politely, and then spent the next few months trying to prove that he was incorrect.
Well, that's bold, eh?
Yeah. Well, I proved instead that he was correct.
Oh, great.
His name's Dr. Robert Scare. He's from Colorado, and writes a book. Latest book, I think, out is called Trauma Spectrum, but world known in terms of in the field of trauma. But
he's also on the same radio station, Conscious Media Network, isn't he?
Yes. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Scare then now works with us too as a consulting staff, helps us see and understand and vice versa trauma in an ever-going way. But trauma is basically anything that the brain records that is perceived by the brain as a threat to itself, to its life. Because my premise was when I began that, you know, my brain is like a network, not unlike a computer network. In fact, exactly like a computer network, except it's one and only one major goal and objective is to keep itself alive.
Hmm.
A trauma, an interruption of that network, is an interruption of a pattern where another pattern is developed by the brain, which it believes helped it live through and exist beyond that trauma, and so it will think that that new network is the best way.
Is a lifesaver.
In fact. So let's say that we're now working with a number of men and women coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And as our people are over there, and we're doing, by the way, pro bono, so if any of your listeners want to come to one of our offices around the United States, that's a pro bono effort on our part, trying to help where we can.
Wonderful.
But effectively, what they learn over there that keeps themselves alive and helps sustain them in that environment is exactly not a way to sustain themselves in our environment here.
Oh, really?
Well, when you see a car along the road, you don't panic here.
No.
It's somebody likely broke down, so you don't drive fast. You don't, you know, you're not crashing across lanes to get away from it. You don't do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I don't think most people do.
No, I don't do that.
Because cars along the road aren't generally threats. They don't have bombs in them. Those do.
Hmm.
And that's a trauma behavior. When you see somebody running at you, even if it's a child here, you don't break out in a sweat and get ready to protect yourself.
No.
But you might over there because you don't know that child isn't carrying, you know, an explosive.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that you're conditioned there is not appropriate for here. And when you come home and you have the resultant behavior non-appropriate to your environment, that we call post-traumatic stress, and that's what the brain is doing. It's living through a pattern that it thought kept it alive, and it won't give it up easily.
Hmm.
And so when we look at that brain pattern, we can see that trauma pattern, and we try to train it to optimize it. And when we do, the brain, when it sees itself in a new state and knows that it's okay, starts gravitating to that new state, and then we do it again, and then we do it again, and then we do it again, and finally it says, aha, I got it.
Hmm.
That's the state that's best.
Hmm. So you've had huge results with post-trauma stress people.
Huge results.
Hmm.
and in a short period of time, generally in a couple weeks.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And generally in anywhere from, say, 15 to 25 sessions.
Wow, that's great. And so you're doing this for people coming back from Iraq or from the war?
Correct.
Well, that's really wonderful. So how does peak potential work? How does... I don't want to interrupt your flow because this is exceedingly interesting.
No. It works the same way.
Hmm.
Let's say that you have a golfer, and maybe this golfer is exceedingly good, perhaps even a professional.
Mm-hmm.
And the golfer is accustomed to, you know, hitting the ball long where he or she wants it and straight.
Mm-hmm.
But from time to time, they pull one way or they pull another way. Is the being off of your game a little bit due to your muscles not working, or is it due to as well, or muscle memory not as well, or is it due to your brain sending signals at times that aren't as effortlessly filled with the positive energy.
Hmm.
And so when we see that golfer and find out that there is a bit of difference in certain areas or a disharmony in certain areas, and we train that golfer's game gets better.
Hmm.
And generally, we can measure that very easily, right? I mean, somebody's shooting in the 90s, we're going to expect to see them shooting in the 80s when we, after 10 or 15 sessions. If somebody's shooting in the 80s, we're going to expect to see them shooting, six strokes less. If somebody in the 670s, we're going to expect to see them 3 strokes less.
Mm-hmm.
It's an 80-20 rule, you get what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So the better they are, the fewer strokes off the game. But why wouldn't it be possible to find a golfer who should shoot 18 under par instead of par?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would
be exceptional, right?
Totally exceptional. But what would cause that person to get to that exceptional game? Well, we believe what causes it is the hub of the wheel first, and that's the brain. I mean, that is, as well as almost any athletic event, is in fact it's a brain game. And so when you balance and harmonize that brain, you're going to perform better. We can prove very quickly, in fact, that when you balance and harmonize, you can lift more weight.
Is that actually by bypassing or rerouting the network past the limitations and the way they're encoded in the brain? Is that what it is?
It could be, but I don't know that.
Oh, that's right. You already said you don't have to know all that.
What I know is that when the brain energy relaxes in a certain way in certain lobes and is balanced in those lobes, then that person becomes optimized in whatever he or she wants to do, be it paint, play golf, play football, I mean, you name it.
Hmm. Hey, Lee, I have another question to throw in. I know a wonderful woman who has no pituitary, and I'm just wondering if brain optimizing can actually create the circuitry to I don't know whether I think it's like create the electrical circuitry as if the brain had that, or
I don't know the answer to the question. Of course, we wouldn't ever say that because all we do is balance and harmonize brain waves.
Right. Do you ever work with people with physical limitations that way?
Yes, but only to balance and harmonize their brain waves.
Right.
And if the pathology falls away, which they often seem to, it's an indication that a more balanced brain is going to reduce that pathology.
Yeah, I guess that's right, eh? I'm just thinking, well, anyway, it just seems like the brain can accommodate, can't it, for all kinds of things.
We don't even know how much it can accommodate.
Mm.
And only 2 weeks ago, you know, a young man of 23 years old stood in my office and told me that he was thinking of a name, and I told him, I asked him, I said, I thought you already had a name, and he said, no, I'm thinking of a name for a company so I can do brain state conditioning for people like me. And 9 months ago, that young man of 22 and a half at the time, had never walked or talked.
Oh, how amazing.
Because he had his cord wrapped around his neck from the time he was born.
Oh, my.
Now, that's an incredible thing. And how did it happen? I don't know that. I have no idea.
Well, we keep hearing we only use like 10% of our brain.
I mean, I don't think so. I don't think any of us use 10%.
Not even that much?
No way.
So optimizing is just moving into more potential, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't even think we know how much potential we have. When you think about it this way. If I were to shuffle a deck of cards in front of you currently and set it on the table,
mm-hmm.
The information about how those cards are stacked is already in the universe, is it not?
Right.
You may not know it, but it's already in the universe.
Right.
What if you could pick up that information, find a way to connect to that information in other ways besides turning the card over and looking at it? We believe you can.
Hmm.
So our quest is to help us all pick up that information. Then the question becomes, well, if we can pick up information, what is it that we're really here for? I mean, well, we're here, it seems to us, it seems to me in particular, I believe that we're here to be healthy and happy, productive, and helpful.
Right.
I think that's why we're here. There isn't any more. So if I can optimize those states, I can pick up more and more information, and I'll get to the place, people will get to the place where that information doesn't have to be shown them in the same way it did before.
Mm-hmm. I was very interested in the fact that the collective is actually, because of the Internet and because of our own evolution, and who knows why anyway, is we're moving to open to more and more of that you're talking about as it goes. I mean, more people are picking up information. Stuff isn't as linear. Energy is moving faster and so on. You think this is all part of this, that brain state?
I do. I absolutely do. And I think it's part of something else, too.
What's that?
And that's traumatizing us.
Which is?
We've never seen the war before like we're seeing it in Iraq.
Yeah.
9/11 was unbelievable. It traumatized us all.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're seeing when people are balanced, when they balance their brains and get out of a trauma state more,
mm-hmm.
we're seeing them to be able to make choices in their life which are based on love rather than fear. And that's the essence of what we do.
Hmm. Which is to take the trauma out so a person is, the love is more available, isn't it?
And that follows through everything and all the tissues in us and our existence. So what do we see? Well, we often see people with pathologies like high blood pressure or many other things which they just change.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the symptoms of the trauma pattern. They're not, you know, the state of the being.
It's interesting because you said the healthy, happy, productive, and helpful, and I'm sort of smiling and going, and evolving.
Yeah.
Because that's, to me, is what you're talking about, is a way out of that conditioning.
But I don't know that we've done that so well in the last, say, 50 years based on the tools that we've been given.
You mean we haven't quite optimized our use of the tools yet, have we?
No.
Mm-mm. So tell me about the machine. Okay, somebody emailed me something that I could not find and said that you recommended, or there's something about brain state technology and a machine that people can use at home, which is not very expensive. Do you know anything about that?
No.
Okay. She thought it was related to your site. So I also know from others that you're increasing the potential of your own machinery and your software is changing radically.
Correct.
Can you talk a bit about that and how it ties into massive evolution?
Well, up to about the beginning of 2006, we had sort of one and a half offices, and today there are 74.
Wow.
We were in Arizona then, and now we're in South Africa, UK, Isle of Wight, Italy, Netherlands, Poland, Hungary, Canada, Mexico, and across the U.S.
And that's people that have trained with you and are using your software?
Correct.
Hmm.
And a year and a half ago, we had about 700 clients, 600, and today we have over 5,000.
What's the training like?
The training is 3 weeks. It involves learning about what we call balance and harmony of brainwave patterns and about the computers and computer software that we provide when our software is licensed to help others balance and harmonize their brain.
Now, how are the results? Like, South Africa is a pretty interesting place. Could use a lot of that, couldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if they could use more than the U.S. at this point, but...
Maybe we won't get into that quite. But this, to me, is like new politics. I keep calling it energy.
You're right on. In 5 years, we'll be able to see pathologies in brainwave patterns based on environment.
Yay.
And then we'll be able to help inform, you know, governing bodies why or how their environment is causing pathologies.
Will the...
at least identify them.
Will the authorities listen to that?
Clearly. I don't know that it matters, because I think the people will.
So when this is rising consciousness among many, many people...
And that's what you're talking about in general anyway.
Yes, it is, yeah.
And so we're just talking about sharing that information and making that information public. And it'll probably take us 5 years to be really helpful. And in 5 years, we'll probably, by late next year, early 2009, we'll probably have 50,000 clients.
Wonderful.
So you can see how we're gonna be about 5x per year after that.
I'm just curious as to what happened with your son. Is he now involved in this?
He's the man. He's my chief operating officer as well as my... And he's in it way up to his 6 foot 6 inch neck. Yep.
Does he just love it, though, after what
he loves it.
Yeah. I mean, walking and talking your truth, eh?
Yeah, he's so cool, and I'm so proud, I can't even tell you.
You probably don't have to. What a parenting tool that is.
Oh, yeah.
It's political, it's parenting advice.
You know, it's interesting what you just said. We see children sometimes because they, like, take a blow on the head or have a birth problem or for various reasons. We see some pretty young children sometimes. But if they're under the age of, say, 11 to 14, depending, pre-puberty, basically. If we see those children, we only will work with them if we can work with the whole family.
Wonderful.
And what we found when we did that was just unbelievable benefit.
Hmm.
So even though the child may be acting out in certain sundry ways, once we train the whole family some, it just those pathologies just disintegrate and that child soars.
Hmm.
And we just completed a couple weeks ago a 3 week effort to demonstrate our technology inside a prison.
Oh, excellent.
And so we had done that previously with people on probation. So we'd done it with probationers, but this time we got to go inside and set up inside.
Wonderful.
And those results were so unbelievably outstanding, and we'll have that published by the 15th of this month on our website. So
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. How can you get results quickly if you go into a prison and work with people for 3 weeks?
I don't know. I can only tell you that it's so much easier than you could imagine.
Huh.
And here's why. When we work with the general population, we'll see a difference. Let's say we take a certain wave patterns on the left and versus those on the right. And we'll see a difference in those, say, of 10% or 20% or sometimes even 30 or 50 or even sometimes a few times 100%.
Mm-hmm.
When we go inside prison and when we also worked with probationers, we saw the difference probably averaged about 250 or 300%.
Hmm.
So it was 10x of what we would experience outside.
How can you tell that so quickly? What I mean is, isn't there a time, don't you take a time, elapsing time in order to see the changes holding?
No, you can do it in, we do it in roughly 27 to 47 minutes.
Can you tell us, give us an example of what somebody went through just so that we can understand? Because to me it's like...
For example, one inmate...
Mm-hmm.
was unable to sit in the chair. He couldn't put his back against the back.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't put his arms literally on the arms of the chair. So when we hooked him up to first take data from his brain, he would move his head so quickly if there was even the slightest noise that he would sometimes pull electrode off.
Hmm.
Now, after the second session, when his brain started, and it immediately responded, by the way.
Hmm.
And after the second session, he was getting in the chair like it was, you know, getting into a comfy down, under a comfy down quilt in the middle of winter.
Hmm.
I mean, it was just unbelievable.
So his whole body was really proving.
All of the inmates that we work with, none of them could read before our training started more than a couple of sentences. They just couldn't hold their attention that much.
Hmm.
And they all read proficiently by the end. One had even read a sociology book cover to cover.
And that's in 3 weeks?
That's 3 weeks.
Wow. I bet you they were so grateful, were they?
How did you know that? Yeah. They're the most grateful clients that we've ever worked with.
Yeah, because their lives, I know, are really, really painful for them.
We just couldn't believe how much we felt for them. All of us have talked about working with them and what an incredible positive experience that was for us.
Hmm.
And how much they gave us.
How many people did you work with and how many worked with you? What I mean is how many helpers did you have?
There was five of us. There was two people up there and one person kind of was the director of the effort and he stayed there all the time. And then we worked three other people through there over the 3 weeks.
Hmm.
And then there was two of us, a Dr. Berselli and myself from Brain State, who came up in the beginning and the end to do interviews and assess where the inmates were.
Well, that's a very thrilling story. What other groups have you worked with? Have you worked with seniors or disability people or any of those?
We worked with a lot of seniors. And we've worked with them to add flexibility, not just for their brain, but for their body.
Great.
We've worked with a lot of...
Did you have exciting results there?
Yes.
Okay.
We haven't had as exciting results with Alzheimer's as we have had with dementia.
Okay.
But we have very positive results even with Alzheimer's.
Hmm.
We worked with probably now over 1,000 people who face various and sundry addictions, substances, meth, coke, crack, heroin, tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, and other things that I don't even know what they are, plus gambling, shopping, sex, and a couple other things. TV, gaming, other things. We've worked with...
How did you do out of 1,000?
Oh, that's our sweet spot.
Hmm.
We're way over 90%.
Great.
We're over 85% with people on meth after 30 months.
Wow, that's wonderful.
With a national average of about 2% in 6 months, yep. We're doing it we're doing really, we're providing a great service there.
Isn't that exciting?
People with sleep issues, I'm amazed. I was sleeping like a baby. I've always slept like a baby and didn't know that there were so many people with sleep issues.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you knew that, but there's a ton of...
I had terrible sleep issues for a while, but I didn't know you then.
Well, just check in now. There's a ton of them. And there's a lot of sleep issues, and then there's a lot, an awful lot of anxiety.
Yeah, especially these days, it's getting worse and worse, or more and more, I should say.
Yeah, and anxiety can cause the body to change, too. It can cause the metabolism to change. Sometimes you'll have excessive weight gains. You'll have joints or jaws or tightenings physically at various places, and it'll all be related.
Mm. Well, I think our time, unfortunately, I'd love to have you talk more. Oh, we have time yet, sorry. Are you giving a talk anywhere?
I just did. I just answered. I do speak from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if I can find appropriate venues, would be willing certainly to do that. We're quite frankly have to this point in time, we've kept our heads down, sort of underneath the radar, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And our purpose is that not because we were trying to hide, but instead we were just trying to get our work done, and we were trying to build enough information so that we could be sure of that which we spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have software that goes out to all these offices and all the training stations, which are probably over about 120 around the world at night, and will gather that data for us and then present it to us. And then that data is being used to make our training protocol more and more proficient.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So as we go on now, we'll expect to see that. But we had to develop that infrastructure, and we just completed it, and it's being newly used effective in August of this year.
Mm.
So we're excited. We have 74 offices now, and we're now ready to handle 20,000.
Wow, that's wonderful.
So we're ready to rock and roll, as they would say.
One of the things I did ask you and didn't wait for the answer was, have you worked with physically disabled people? Have you worked with any of that kind of group?
Well, not entirely. I don't. If you name something, I could probably tell you yes or no. But in general,
cerebral palsy.
We have worked with cerebral palsy a little bit. We've worked with Parkinson's some. We've worked with MS, people with MS. But of course, we don't work with those problems. We only balance and harmonize brainwave patterns. When we have done that, we have found tremors being less, more muscle control. We have found MS functions seem to often diminish.
Mm-hmm.
Symptomologies diminish.
Are you willing to take a call? Because we have a caller.
Sure.
Okay. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi, Veronica. It's Robin.
Oh, good, Robin. I was just thinking about you.
I had some trouble getting my computer to get you on. I found out it was my equipment, and so I missed some of the show. And I'd like to have a question that I could have answered on the air. Hopefully it's not repeating what's already been discussed.
Just go ahead.
Okay.
This is Lee Gerdes. This is Robin.
Hi.
Hi, Lee. I'd like to ask how your technology has done. Has it been tried with children with cerebral palsy, and how has it done?
We don't deal with any diagnoses, or we don't work on anything. We don't treat anything, and we don't heal anything.
Uh-huh.
We only balance and harmonize brain waves.
Uh-huh.
We have seen it work with some people with cerebral palsy, where it seemed to reduce tremors the same way with Parkinson's, the same way with some symptomologies of MS. But we don't really do that, understand. We only balance and harmonize brainwaves.
I understand. I probably should have rephrased the question for, like, peaks of erratic behavior and I'm not necessarily anything physical, but for state of mind.
Yeah, for state of mind, for certain, but also that which the state of mind can relate to. For instance, restless leg, night sweats, mm-hmm. tremors, muscle control, anger issues.
Yeah.
You know, as far as we're concerned, we're talking about a balance and harmony of the hub of the wheel, and these are all just spokes on the outside of it.
Yeah.
But if you can get the hub of the wheel so it's rounded and working, you know, then the spokes can work. If it's not rounded and working, the spokes can't work.
And I want to say something else that you've already said, Lee, that Robin didn't hear, which is when it's young people or children, they'll often work with the whole family instead
yes.
of just the one person.
Yeah.
With greater success. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes. And where are you located?
Well, if you look on our website, we're located in lots of places around the country and around the world. We have 74 offices.
Oh, okay.
Now around the world.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for calling.
You're welcome, and thank you, Veronica.
Okay, blessings.
Bye.
Well, that was a good call. I know that she's worked very hard with a young one with cerebral palsy, and she's interested in the brain. So there you have it.
Yeah, I believe that somebody probably smarter than us, and that's cool, will use this technology or something like it. And someday find some keys to many of these things, including some major diseases.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Have you had any experimentation with any disease at all?
Of course, we can't do that.
Yeah.
But we are working with some MDs now and looking at putting together some clinical trials for some of the problems that they see. Closed head injury is a possibility. We've dealt with. One of our licensees has trained her sister, who was in a coma, and she's come back from that coma, and has now gone home and still speaks two languages and et cetera.
How long was she in a coma?
You know, I don't know exactly, but something around 2 months.
Mm.
Had a major brain hemorrhage after giving birth to twins.
Oh, my.
And
she's been able to have her brain balanced.
Well, she's in the process. I mean, you're talking about a huge imbalance here.
So when it's a huge imbalance, you're looking at how long, like, say, 6 months of training or 6 months of work? Or
yeah, I can't tell you that yet. But something like that or something like another... You know, sometimes obsessive compulsive disorder is like etching a pathway, and that seems to take longer. Autism is something else that would certainly take a lot longer.
In a case of autism, do you tend to work with the whole family at that point, too?
We haven't worked with autistic children that much. And so just because we don't have a facility... you know, that to do that in.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't answer your question honestly. I would prefer to do that with anybody that was a child. I would prefer to work with the whole family.
It's interesting. I believe you already said in this conversation that the rate of work with people was going it was going to be faster and faster, right?
Yeah. We're learning more, and we can hone our protocol so that it's more applicable to the individual and to specific narrowing brainwave groups.
Well, this is all very exciting. Would you like to give everybody your information, your website, please?
It's Brain State Technologies, that's one word, .com. And if you look on that website under interviews, and then click on the first introduction and some other things on there, you will see that there's a video where we go through an introduction to what we do in brain state conditioning.
It's a wonderful website. It has a lot of different avenues in of exploration, so people should spend some time with it.
Thank you.
And it tells where your office is or where your main office is. It also gives a whole listing of all the offices that are now using your kind of brain balancing system, right?
Right.
And I really appreciate your call or your visit with us today. I'm very excited about it. I'd like to come down and train. I don't know. Maybe I will.
That's cool.
Yeah, and you're in Scottsdale most of the time, eh?
Uh-huh. And we have offices close to you in Canada, on the Canada side. Canada is just exploding.
Yeah. Great.
I mean, they get it. It just, I don't know why. But it
because
seems
we're
like
brilliant. That's why.
Well, we know that, but the population just is, seems so open.
Oh, that's great! Is it in Vancouver?
It is. Yeah, Vancouver, Vancouver Island, and Victoria, and now I don't even know. You'll have to look on the website for somebody's going to get mad at me because I didn't say where their location was.
Oh, I guess we'll just have to do some exploring and keep in touch with your various studies. I think that's really exciting, too. You're going to put the results of the studies up on your website?
Yes, we will. Mm-hmm.
Well, I thank you so much for your visit. It's just been wonderful for me. I'm feeling very excited for humanity.
Thanks. So are we.
All right. Thanks very much, Lee.
Okay.
All right, this is Veronica Entwistle, and that was our paradigm shifter for the week. Next week, we're going to have on Barbara Hand Clow. Barbara's been working with Pleiadians for many, many years. She's also a shaman. She's got a strong history in Native American work. Knows a lot about the Mayan culture, 2012. Oh, my, and she's written, I think, 9 books called The Pleiadian Agenda. Just a sec, I have one right here. The Alchemy of 9 Dimensions and many more. She's a really, really interesting woman with so much to teach us. So you want to come with your paper and pencil as well. Lee Gertis's talk was so full of information, I wrote a lot. I wonder if you did too. And this is Veronica Entwistle. I like to think that we're all paradigm shifters listening to BBS Radio. BBS Radio is also a paradigm shifter, isn't it? We're moving through a time on our planet where human consciousness is really being impacted with waves of change. And it's a paradoxical time, it's a polarizing time, but holy mackerel, if you learn to surf those waves of change, we can create the most amazing reality, can't we? So this is Veronica Entwistle saying that I will see you next week on Tuesday at 4 p.m. West Coast time. And Thursday night on Jackie Salvitti's ET Healing, I'll be there to be her sidekick as we talk to Jim Sparks, who, as I said earlier, has been abducted by various ET groups and organizations for over 20 years and writes about it in his book, The Keepers, and talks about his experiences. So tune in at 8 o'clock on Thursday night for Jackie Salvitti and ET Healing, and I'll see you next Tuesday here on BBS Radio. Many blessings, much love to all of you as we keep growing.